Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
It's the Week 13 Horsing Around podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, as always, for listening to us, taking some time to imbibe in a little Broncos conversation with myself and Broncos sideline reporter and KOA and Denver Sports 760's own Andy Lindahl. Andy, always a pleasure.
Yeah, you know what bothers me? We've hit the time of year where I can hear a little something in your nose, and I've got it too. Where we're just, not only do we share holiday greetings and glad tidings, we share head colds, it seems, in the broadcast and football beat writing world.
And then what happens is, you've got a couple of kids at home, right?
Sure.
Yes, yeah. And I have one who's in preschool. And so your kids bring home illnesses. My kid brings home an illness. Then we come to a place like this. We come to the office, and everyone else gets it because that's how you get epidemics. Isn't that how the plague began?
I think so. Isn't there a movie about this where everybody starts out happy? Sadly, there is a bug going around this facility, and it's the injury bug. Normally, you and I like a little bit of levity, but I don't know. I don't know where you want to go. All I know is I'm still in shock. I don't think I've woke up from the bad dream that was Sunday night. And then there's just little layers to the dream where now there's an injured foot and a fullback gone for the year. This is unbelievable, Andrew.
It's unbelievable, but it's also football.
It's the NFL.
And it certainly says a lot about Andy Janovich that he played the entire game on an ankle injury he suffered on the first play. But obviously it's not going to sustain. He can't keep that up, so he goes to injured reserve. So you're back to square one at fullback. He'd just gotten rid of the club cast that he played a few weeks with. Really, I thought, was very effective when he was in there Sunday night. And now, you know, not only do you have Andy Janovich out, Trevor Siemian, it's in wait-and-see mode. He did not practice again Thursday, didn't practice Wednesday or Thursday. Has a foot problem. Obviously, if he can't go, Paxton Lynch will be the starter. And I think let's touch on Paxton Lynch for a moment, because obviously there were some ups and downs in his game, roughly game and a half of play back in October. But he gets to go against a Jacksonville defense that, while it's playing better, still isn't too great at this point. And he'll have an offense that has seen Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders get more involved, Jordan Taylor becoming a threat, and now A.J. Derby becoming a viable underneath option. He had four receptions on Sunday. So certainly it seems like the tools are better positioned for Paxton Lynch to succeed if he has to go out there. What do you expect from him if he plays?
I don't know what to expect yet, to be honest with you. I don't want to be doom and gloom. But I guess this is bummer news for me because I don't know. You know how we feel around here. I can't wait to see the competition between Trevor and Paxton next year when Paxton has a full year to kind of take in the offense. Trevor's had a full year to play. I think it's going to make for one heck of a training camp and a lot of interesting theater. Mm-hmm. But I've been telling people all along, I don't believe Paxton's ready. I don't think it's a scenario where you wanted to play him. Now, hopefully, to your point, he should have the tools he needs to hopefully succeed better, and I think they're going to have to change up the offense so he can succeed better.
They're going to have to get him out of the pocket more, I think, for one thing.
Well, let's be honest about it, Andrew. I mean, you can't just scrap who you are. You can't go – I'm not suggesting you go fully back to the Manning offense, but you might as well use a little bit more of the shotgun plays that you have, because without Andy Janovich and without a true fullback, there's no need to force the issue as far as how you're running out of the two-back set anymore, because there's technically really no two-back to put back there.
And your best package may well be a spread shotgun with two tight ends. And to go in the Wayback Machine a little bit, in 2012, that was actually the base package for Peyton Manning's first year. Now, Brandon Stokely came in and played quite a bit in the slot, but their base offense that year included Joel Dreesen and Jacob Tammy as the starting tight ends with Demaryius Thomas and Eric Decker on the outside, and that got results. So maybe you do go back to something like that, because I think certainly if you're looking at a best combination of players, especially one that can help Paxton Lynch succeed if he has to start, I would think that includes A.J. Derby.
Oh, I agree with you. I do want to make the point. I guess what disappoints me is I thought Trevor, to borrow the Kirk Cousins line that he seems like he's dropping one a week on us now. But I thought Trevor had a bit of at least a half of how do you like me now. Maybe not a full game. There were struggles. It was hard to watch at times in the first half, but both defenses were playing out of their mind.
And he was under siege, especially Justin Houston was having his way with Tyson Brailo.
And the switch was made.
Yes.
But Trevor, the pass to Benny, the throw, there are so many throws you could go back to where I think the team says, all right, this kid can take us where we want to go, and now all of a sudden here's the foot injury. So that's what's disappointing.
It's disappointing, especially because you felt like he'd finally gotten past the shoulder injury. He was more willing to take off and run with the football and absorb the contact that comes of being a ball carrier. And then you look at the touchdown they threw to Jordan Taylor in the third quarter when he escapes pressure from Justin Houston, who'd gotten by Stevenson. Then Stevenson does a great job of sticking with the play and guiding Houston to the sideline and giving Simeon a chance to double back. And then in the end zone, you've got Jordan Taylor doing this zigzag type thing back and forth in the right corner of the end zone. A.J. Derby's trying to get open. He's drawn double coverage. Emmanuel Sanders is coming across the back of the end zone, having broken off his route, and he's actually waving his arms to get open. Simeon has set that up, but you've got great effort down from those three guys in the end zone, and he ends up finding Taylor. He could have easily thrown to Emmanuel Sanders on that play because he had a window. Just, it was a great effort by Simeon, but it was a great team effort on the play, and it was completely off script. And the big question I think people had with Simeon going into this is, can he make plays off script? Can he go beyond what they're designed? When something breaks down, when protection breaks down, can he make something out of nothing? It was one of the things that drew the Broncos to Paxton Lynch because he had that innate ability at Memphis. Seeing that from Trevor Simeon, I thought, was massive in terms of his development. And to look ahead, you mentioned next year the competition that's coming because Lynch is going to be better. But the fact that you have a Trevor Simeon who can make those similar kind of plays, along with his experience, you know, may well give him an upper hand when we get to that competition. We'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Circling back to what it means for Sunday, I do wonder, I don't know, right now as we sit here and we bring you the podcast, it kind of feels like the momentum is towards Trevor probably not playing, and maybe it's going to be Paxton. He's not been out there.
Well, the fact that he's in a walking boot.
Not good.
Not good.
But it also makes me wonder, either one of two things could happen, right? They either try what they tried last year and they shoot up Trevor's foot and see if he can go that way, or if it's something that's similar to what Manning dealt with, or you learn from the Manning experience last year and you don't have him play and you try to get him ready for a Tennessee game that is going to be much tougher than this Jacksonville game, although this Jacksonville game moves up a couple notches in its toughness scale if you have a rookie quarterback out there.
And if you have a team that's, even though they haven't turned it into wins, is playing better. Malik Jackson had a couple of sacks of Tyrod Taylor last week in the Jaguars' loss. Blake Bortles has improved his touchdown-interception ratio the last few weeks. And I think most significantly, he's cut his sack rate down. He's still the most sacked quarterback in the NFL the last two seasons, but now he's getting sacked, I think, about once every 26 or 27 pass plays compared to one every 14 or 15 or so. That's significant. And granted, the Broncos' strength is in the pass rush. We all know that. I think they're going to be able to be disruptive because of the way Bortles has a little bit of an elongated delivery, the way he has that low elbow point when he rears back to throw. I think that's a strip sack fumble waiting to happen against Von Miller, DeMarcus Ware, and friends. But at the same time, it's still a team that's playing better. They're running the football well. He has three targets he can trust in Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns, and Marquise Lee. If Julius Thomas plays, there's that underneath option. They can cause some problems for a deposing defense.
They certainly can. You can't take them lightly. And they're going to be motivated. I think the Broncos, I still remember how upset a lot of the Broncos were about how the Raiders celebrated so heartily after the victory over them around Halloween there. I think the Broncos better be ready that Jacksonville, this is it for them. let's be honest, with the way that season's gone, this really is probably the last game they can find motivation to get up for.
Defending champions coming into town.
I love the line from Jeff Legwald, there's nothing worse than NFL football gone bad to try to endure. It's a miserable existence. Whether they win or not, you're not going to the playoffs. You've got a month to figure out, is your coach going to be there or not? You're still going to beat the snot out of yourself going through the last three or four games of the season, whether you have anything to play for or not. So it'll be interesting to see how they finish out the year. But to your point, look, they're going to be up for this one. Malik is going to be up for this one. Malik's going to probably get some of his defensive players. You know, we know these guys try to find ways to motivate themselves at times when you're in the Jacksonville position. Mm-hmm. You and I have covered seasons like that.
Yep.
It's built into this one. Again, it is built in. Trevor Siemian, Paxton Lynch, they don't care. You're wearing the ring from last year. We want to beat you. And we want to beat you in our place. And then you can tell yourself, hey, maybe we're closer, right? And maybe this leads to another game next week if you get a win. Then all of a sudden they can kind of raise the banner of, hey, we got on the right track at the end. It's kind of, I hate to say it, it's kind of like a Rockies thing where the Rockies love to tell you how that September is going to turn into a good season.
I grew up in Tampa for, you know, a good chunk of my childhood. Hey, the Bucs would have games like this year after year. I remember one year they're 3-10, and they're at home, and Buffalo comes, and this is right when Buffalo's starting to get good. Thurman Thomas is a rookie. I think they were 11-2 going in, and the result is the only 10-5 score in NFL history in favor of the Bucs. Just an absolutely stunning result that you couldn't have seen coming. And that's the sort of thing you have to be careful about if you're the Broncos. Because I remember the Bucs that day came out because they had their hair on fire. They got it. They got an early takeaway, some early stops. Vinny Testaverde, never known for his mobility, runs for a touchdown. Things start breaking their way. The team feels the momentum. The fans feel the momentum. They start responding when they start smelling a chance of an upset, and it just feeds on itself. That's the kind of thing you have to be careful about in this game. And that's why the Broncos, they've been such a slow-starting team this year, and they were a slow-starting team again on Sunday. Still the worst team in the league in terms of first-quarter scoring margin. Actually, interesting, first-half scoring margin, the Jaguars are the worst team in the league.
Really?
Their issues are in the second quarter. But I think it's important. It is important to get off to a good start against these guys. You know, maybe you can withstand an even first quarter, say a scoreless first quarter, but you need to get to, I think, build a substantial lead by halftime. I think you want to have this thing by two scores at halftime, and if you don't, you're putting yourselves in a position to where they can make the Jaguars make one play and they can turn the game, and their fans are going to start believing and their team's going to start believing.
To your point, I normally wouldn't say it this early in the year, but you and I have watched these games. Typically, it comes the last couple games of the season, but I felt like I saw a little of it when Jacksonville played Tennessee on the Thursday night a little bit ago. This is a team, to me, that if you get up, like you said, if you put a lead together, maybe you get a double-digit lead.
They'll pack it in.
You're just dominating. Don't let them get anything going. There's been no rhythm to their game. Yeah, they may decide, do I really care about this? You know, all that motivation we had going, does that really matter? No, it doesn't. It's just another miserable game. We've already read this chapter, already read this book. So I'd like to see you do that. Again, normally that's a last couple week of the season thing. You really get it when guys want to make sure they're not getting hurt so they're not stuck in the off season doing a training regimen, right, to start the off season.
But they've also been hearing about how their season is done and their coach might be done. They've been hearing that for over a month now because that Tennessee game you pointed to, that was in late October.
And that did it for them.
Yeah.
That kind of was the announcement, you guys aren't going to turn this thing around.
Yeah, because they actually went into that game 2-4, and in a bad division like the AFC South, that put them right there squarely in the race. And the Titans and Jaguars had played a lot of close, even games over the years because they're both scuffling down at the bottom of the division, but Tennessee just ran away from it, from them. And the other interesting thing about that, at the end of that game, the Jaguars had a stretch going back to last year where half of their touchdowns had come when behind three or more scores in the second half. Since then, they've played close games. They haven't won since the Titans game, but a 5-point loss to Kansas City at Arrowhead that they easily could have won. It was one of those dominate the stat sheet, make your turnovers at the wrong time, you lose. They play Houston at home. That's the game where Blake Bortles has the throw that bounces off the foot. They end up losing by 3. They did themselves in with their own mistakes that day. They go to Detroit. Detroit's offense was playing very well, but it takes defensive touchdowns for Detroit to end up winning 26-19, and then they play Buffalo close. Now, I mentioned that Detroit game, mentioned the defensive touchdowns. I think a big key for the Broncos, they need this defense to bounce back from that late fade last Sunday, and they need not just stops, they need takeaways. I think you need two takeaways to win this game.
I don't disagree with you. I think, look, if the D is going to be the D and the D that it was, frankly, for three quarters last game, you're going to be fine.
Yep.
Because despite all the – I mean, again, it's tough to have that loss to Kansas City followed up by hearing your starting quarterback who's really showing you growth has a hurt foot. That's all tough news to take in a five-day span. That said, you and I both know the Broncos are the better team. The Broncos are the deeper team. The Broncos are the team that have won the close games, been in the fight, made it to the playoffs, and closed in December. Jacksonville's done none of that. So I'm not going to overreact to this too much. But to your point, everybody, I think, is starting to look past this game and starting to realize Tennessee is going to be a bigger challenge than you had circled on the board beginning of the year. And you and I kind of made reference to that game a couple podcasts ago. Mm-hmm. About don't be overlooking this. If nothing else, it's going to be a physical game.
But now you got to look at this game. And you can't, and you've used up your mulligans potentially.
Yeah, easily.
I mean, Miami, the best they play New England to close the season, but that's been a game Miami's won. The Dolphins have had the Patriots' number in recent years at home, and the rest of Miami's schedule, they don't play anybody better than 6-5. So you cannot rely on Miami having a fade here. You certainly can't rely on Kansas City having a fade, even though they had a shaky performance against Jacksonville. They lost to Tampa Bay. They just, you know, they came into Denver and had the drive when they needed it most. Had a great game on special teams when the Broncos had an awful night on special teams, and end up stealing a win. And here's a little stat for you, Andy. Broncos had more than 460 yards, and they allowed fewer than 280 yards. In that scenario, teams had won 18 games in a row until last Sunday. That tells you you're losing the game on special teams.
Yeah, it's look, that game is tough to swallow. There's no doubt about it. And the problem now is you've given Kansas City all this momentum. You've given Kansas City this belief, this confidence. Frankly, I think Kansas City is probably a bigger problem than the Raiders right now because Derek Carr and that finger injury may not easily be overlooked. And we'll see. But as you look at the numbers as you just described, the Raiders are winning, but they're also winning with some interesting defense at times. You know,
interesting defense and the beneficiary of some interesting decisions,
yeah,
like Ron Rivera chasing points in the third quarter. And as a result, the Panthers are sitting there behind three trying to come back where they could have just simply been tied if they had not panicked after the early third quarter miss by Graham Gano. And they just said, okay, we're going to take the one. Instead, they keep going for two. And, you know, that's what happens when you chase points sometimes.
Well, that's also why I was confident. I've got to tell you, I was so sure the Broncos weren't going to lose that game when they went up eight. Because I thought even if you got the touchdown, you're not getting a two-point conversion.
That exactly, and that actually, to go to a point, I know people have probably made this, have called in and suggest this to you on the radio. Why didn't the Broncos go for two when they were up seven? Well, if you look at the last couple of years with this defense, you know, they had an eight-point lead at Chicago, and they stopped the Bears on the two-point conversion. They had an eight-point lead against New England in the AFC Championship. They stopped them on the two-point conversion. They had an eight-point lead against San Diego earlier this season. They stop them at the, you know, in goal to go before they get a chance to go for the conversion. The point being, Gary Kubiak understandably views an eight-point lead in a late-game situation as a two-score lead. So there is a difference, a massive difference to him between seven and eight. So it's, you don't necessarily have to go for two to get that two scores. He understandably views it as, you know, with his defense, as 8 points is tough to get. And for the first time in that situation, really, the defense buckled and collapsed.
Yeah, and that's why it was so strange to see. That's why it was so tough. That's why I think it was hard for a lot of people to kind of grasp the loss. It also goes back to, we might as well just address the other kind of white elephant in the room from the week. And anybody saying that they should have punted or gone for it on fourth down, in my mind, A, has not seen Brandon McManus kick, and more importantly, B, was not taking into account the fact that the Raiders won earlier in the day. The Raiders win forces your hand. Both teams had to have that game the other night. And unfortunately, the Broncos didn't get it. But the Raiders win changes your decision-making in my mind. And when it was under 65, as I was doing the math before the third down play, I was thinking on the third down play, just pick up 5 yards. Just get them a little bit closer if you can, even if you don't get the first down. To me, we are in the realistic window of taking a crack at this thing because you got to have this game. It's your divisional home game. Got to have it.
Unfortunately, the Chiefs played defense that way. Yep. That's to their credit. They knew the Broncos might try to get 5 or 6 yards underneath, and they make sure that was impossible. And they forced Trevor Siemian to go to Benny Fowler man for man, and he almost made the grab. And that
it was almost like the grab that Gronk made, who's now out for a significant period of time. If you're not
hurt
with the back injury,
8 weeks is what the reports are, which would obviously mean he doesn't play in Denver in Week 15, and would take him out through the AFC Championship game.
Well, and that's where Gronk made that play last year on fourth down, similar scenario, third down in this case for Denver. Regardless, the Gronk injury is huge. You got Brady on a gimpy knee. I will say this, and it pains me. I feel like the Raiders are sold under a lucky star right now. A lot of luck, a lot of good bounces. But
some people said that about the Broncos last year.
Well, and it was fair. Yeah. And I was going to say that. The Broncos caught plenty of luck on their way to that. And I think it happens for any team. Any team catches the right breaks to win a Super Bowl. That's just how hard it is. But I'm worried that things are setting up for the Raiders. As much as it feels lucky, now you've got a battered and bruised New England squad. And I'm starting to wonder who else can challenge them. I think the Chiefs can challenge them.
It also sets up for a wide-open AFC playoffs. And I think if you're the Broncos, you really just focus on getting in. Just
get in the tournament.
Just get in. And this team, if the defense – and one thing that's kind of gone under the radar, the defense against the run has improved drastically in the last couple of games. The Chiefs' longest run was 7 yards. Pretty unusual for them, and they certainly like to pound the football, and they like to get Alex Smith with some scrambles. If you keep holding teams down on the run, then this defense will eventually get back to where it was. And if this Broncos team can get in the playoffs and get its defense peaking, then as I have said, as our friend Jeff Legwalt says, defense travels. And then you've just got to get a little bit more consistency from the offense, particularly on the offensive line, and you have an equation that you can win with in the postseason, especially if you're talking about a Patriots team without Gronk and a Raiders team that, I think, like you said, there's a little bit of pixie dust on the Raiders right now. Although I feel like if I said that to a Raiders fan, they'd punch me.
Oh, I'm sure they would, but they're not. You know what? Look, I would also say the Raiders have played a little bit tougher schedule than Carolina did last year, but again, a lot of things went Carolina's way to a 15-1 schedule, and when it didn't, you didn't know how to deal with it. And I'm just curious, when everything doesn't go the Raiders' way, and that may happen come the playoffs against some good defense.
And look at what Kansas City did to the Raiders in Oakland, and Kansas City has that game at Arrowhead coming up later this month in their back pocket. I mean, maybe we're talking about the Chiefs being in position for a Super Bowl run.
I would not sleep on that team. Now, I don't – I thought it was funny because I thought Andy Reid was using – I thought it was classic Andy Reid clock management, using his timeouts too soon. 3 minutes, no timeouts. Broncos score a touchdown, and again, you're up 8. And I just thought everything had gone the right way.
I disagree with that. And the reason why is, in that scenario, you're using the timeouts on defense because that's when you're going to save the most time. Because when you're on offense, you are naturally in hurry-up mode, and you can kill the clock with a spike, or you can kill the clock with a rollout and throw out of bounds. There are things you can do on offense, whereas on defense, you're more powerless. The only weapon that you have in your bag is the timeout. So you call the timeout, then you are guaranteed to save 40 seconds. So I actually agreed with how they call the timeouts. I thought that was a strategy. I think the Broncos would have probably done the same thing if they'd been in the Chiefs' shoes, that they use the timeouts on defense. You don't save them because you know you're going to be in hurry-up mode and you're going to be conserving the clock your own way.
Well, I'm sure the Chiefs would have felt pretty good about things then after they throw a touchdown after you take your last timeout. So,
yeah.
But
and that's the other debate. I mean, people have suggested.
Oh, I know.
Benny Fowler.
Look, I'm sorry. Yeah. That with 3 minutes left, you're just not – I don't think any player's in that mode yet. hey, let me fall down at the two and let you run out three or four, you know?
Inside of 2 minutes, you're in that mode. And right. I think if you recall C.J. Anderson back in 2014 against the Dolphins going down after he gets the first down to allow the Broncos to run out the clock. But I think it was not just the clock situation. I think it was also the field position. I don't think anyone was thinking from your own 24-yard line on third down this play is going to go 76 yards.
No.
I think from midfield or closer, I think maybe you would have had that thought, and someone in the huddle might have said, hey, you know, think about the clock as well, but not from not at that point in the field.
Lead. It gave you an 8-point lead. Another reason, aren't you thinking, I've got to add to the points here.
8-point lead.
I'm not worried about the clock. I want some points with 3 minutes to go.
And going back to Kubiak's thought pattern, it's a 2-score lead with the defense you've got. So.
You know what? It's a game that didn't go the Broncos' way. Hopefully this one does. Hopefully we can have a little fun next week, Andrew. It's a little cloudy in our sunny state today.
Metaphorically speaking, yes. And, of course, where are we going on Sunday? The Sunshine State.
Welcome back to the AFC West Roundup. I'm Eric Dalala, joined, as always, by Benjamin M. Swanson. And
we have
learned through sources close to the team that M stands for Michael.
Yep, I'm the source.
So
sorry to out myself there.
And Benjamin Michael Swanson today is dressed like either a painter or a Euro DJ or something in between.
I guess a black long sleeve shirt and khakis.
And a beard.
That helps. For a painter.
Yeah, you wore a beard today. Yep. I have a question for you, Ben, before we get started.
Let's do it.
Dun, 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 dun. Do you prefer old-time rock and roll or regular rock and roll?
You gotta have that old-time rock and roll.
Gotta take those old records off the shelf, you know? I think Matt Boyer, coming up later in the podcast, would agree, based on his ringtone. We'll give his cell phone number out later in the show for those of you who want to call in. But in the meantime, you want to talk some AFC West?
Sure, let's do it. Yeah. Starting to get some clarity here.
Yeah, a little too much clarity if you're the Broncos, because that was a tough 30-27 loss. We've heard over and over again about that game and how it happened, so I don't think we should spend too much time there. But again, the Raiders, and I was saying this on Sunday as we were watching the game, there have been 4 or 5 games, it feels like, and maybe even the last 6 weeks, that they should lose, and they find ways to win. So either you're going to see...
Like that Tampa game.
That Tampa game, for one. Was that the overtime one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. Tampa one. This one against Carolina shouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think you're going to see one of two things. Either...
As always, we should pay much attention to Eric's predictions, the
Chargers are well on their way.
Yeah, the Chargers are going to...
But one of two things is going to happen, because this is just how things work. They're either going to regress to the mean this season, or they're going to be able to ride this string of luck through the playoffs, and they'll regress next season. But you regress at some point. You don't win every close game. It just, the luck factor, it doesn't work like that. And so...
Is it luck?
If you look at things like S&P rankings...
Luck
is part of it.
It's part of it. But.
And so, you know, I don't know if it'll happen this year. Maybe they ride that string of success to a conference championship game or a conference title or whatever, who knows at this point. But at some point, you're going to see the Raiders lose 3 or 4 games that these past few weeks that they would have won. So that's interesting. I think it's worth keeping an eye on. Just when is that going to catch up with them? This week, they get the Bills at home. And, you know, I like the Bills in some regards in terms of how they play against average teams and bad teams. But the Bills don't play well against good teams, and that's why I'm a little skeptical that they're going to be able to come into Oakland and win. If you look at their last few weeks, they beat the Jaguars, they beat the Bengals on the road, but then they lost at Seattle, they lost by 16 to New England, they lost in Miami. So against the good teams that they've played, they have not fared well.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing the Bills can get that rushing attack going, because I think that's one thing that does keep the Raiders' defense kind of off their... off balance, I guess. However, they're not the most consistent team, I would say, there. So I would expect the Raiders to keep this streak going.
Yeah, and we talked
unfortunately.
Wow.
Bias.
Yeah. It comes out. Yeah, you know, we were talking about this in the office today, is that we've all played similar schedules in the AFC West, but really as it comes down to it, the advantage that the Chiefs and the Raiders have by not having to play the Patriots is enormous. And obviously those games are set by where you finish in the division the year before, and it's meant to set a level standard of competition so that if you're the last place team in the AFC West, you're not playing the first place team in the AFC East every year. But in this case, we're coming down the stretch, and the Broncos, after you're talking, even if you beat Jacksonville and Tennessee, which are no sure things, you're sitting at 9-4, and you still probably got to win two of the three, at least one of the three. And it's still a tough schedule, so it'll be really interesting, especially with Trevor Siemian hurt. We'll see if he's able to make it back next week for Tennessee.
Yep.
At this point, we just don't know. But that's where the Raiders are at. As far as the Chiefs go, they have the Falcons this week on the road.
That'll be a tough game.
Yeah, that should be interesting. The Falcons have fallen off a little bit, but just because they had such a hot start.
Yeah, it was just hard to sustain such a... I mean, they were destroying franchise records left and right for passing. And
they've gotten it back together a little bit. They've won three of their last four. They're sitting at 7-4 in first place in the NFC South. That looks at this point like it is theirs unless Tampa Bay really makes a push.
Yeah.
But I kind of like Atlanta in that game. I don't know about you.
I do, too. I just really like the strength of their wide receiving core. It's pretty deep. Atlanta's really good on that end.
Yeah.
They have a pretty balanced attack with... God, it seems like they just have running backs for days.
Absolutely.
I mean, at the top, you've got a couple good guys, but then they just had that guy who they signed.
Yep.
Like, I don't even remember this guy's name, but the Browns dropped him apparently this year, and they picked him up, and he had a couple of touchdowns.
Twitter beef. So that's what the Chiefs are up to. And sorry if you're a Chargers fan that listens to our podcast every week, but I think for the rest of the season, we're gonna skim what they're doing, because in this race,
rough.
It is not particularly... meaningful, if I could say.
Yeah, I guess not.
They are now sitting at 5-6, pretty much guarantee that they're not going to get a playoff spot unless they win out and some crazy stuff happens. They're at Tampa they host Tampa this week. They could win that game. They could not win that game. I think it's more important for Tampa than it is for them. So
yeah,
we'll see.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, as we saw last week, I think San Diego is still playing teams pretty tough.
Yeah. So then, now that we've kind of glanced over everybody there, as we saw today in the news, Von Miller, I don't know if you've heard of him.
Yep.
Good player, you could say.
He
sent wine and a personalized card to every member of an AFC West team. So whether you're practice squad or on IR or on the active roster, he sent everybody a bottle of wine.
That's really nice.
They just set his little eyeglasses on it. Yeah, it was very nice.
Kind of wine?
It looked like red, but I...
Yes. There's three kinds of wine.
Well, if you ask...
red, white, and rosé.
Bubbly.
Oh, I guess that's the kind of wine. I guess champagne's the kind of wine.
Yeah.
Four kinds.
Yeah. So, I prefer white. A little bit better with the
palate. I think it's just a blend.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. I don't think you know what that is.
Yeah.
Eric's a frat boy, so he just knows... all the light beers.
Is that like a PBR mixed with a red? Is that what that is?
Yes.
I don't know if PBR is an official sponsor. We have to bleep that out.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, I'm curious, if you had to send something to an AFC West team, what would you send them? Would you personalize for each team?
I guess. It'd be really hard. That's like 300 people.
Yeah, at least.
Right?
Yeah,
like that is a ton.
I don't know. Did
people.
He do this for our team as well? It wasn't clear to me.
I'm not sure.
But yeah, that's even if not, that's 70 guys on each team. That's a good amount.
Yeah, and it's a nice gift. I mean, everyone, at the very least, you go take that to a party.
Yeah,
but it's a pretty cool deal. I'd love to get a bottle of wine,
especially from Vaughn. So Vaughn, if you're listening. Yeah, I think he was talking about...
with the glasses,
about,
too?
Yeah.
That's pretty neat.
He thought about
keep
trips.
That bottle.
He thought about...
I think he was just joking.
Well,
I don't think he would actually get everyone trips to Vegas for the entire AFC West.
It'd be crowded in Vegas. They'd finally
that would be crowded.
There.
Also, I don't think he'd need to do that for
why would
the
an
Raiders.
AFC West team... yeah, I was going to say, why would an AFC West team go to Las Vegas? Boom! Anyway, so... Yeah, I think wine is a good thing just because it's like a little personalized.
It's nice. It's not big. Like
no,
it's,
but it's meaningful. It's not like you're getting luggage tags, though. That's something to think about.
No. No, people can get their own luggage tags.
No? What about like monogrammed stationery?
I guess that's nice. You really gonna? How are you going to figure out like middle names for all these like players on practice squad?
It only took me 6 weeks to figure out your middle name. I'm sure Vaughn can do it.
I guess you could. Man, I don't know. That's tough.
Yeah. I mean, when you're starting to think about things to send to everybody, how do you know that everyone is 21, though?
Oh, that's true. Uh-oh.
Khalif.
Uh-oh.
Khalif Raymond is 21. That was a joke.
Just wondering if there are people on the other teams.
I think everyone's probably 21.
Probably.
You can't leave till you're a junior, so. But yeah, that's interesting. Something to think about. If you have an idea, Coats.
Like a blazer or something.
Oh.
That'd be nice. That's a lot of people. With, like, that's a lot of money.
Team fabric sewn in. Yeah, and he did say, he said, I've always wanted to do something like this. I finally have the means to do it. It's very nice. It's not the only thing that Vaughn has done. We can tell you that. And I think it's great to show leadership.
I think it's better than last year's gift to people in the Broncos locker room, which was blood flow underwear. It's like helps your blood flow.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Podcast is not suitable for children, apparently, with Ben Swanson behind the mic.
And he got them whiskey.
Well,
which is nice.
Now it's fine. but yeah, no, Vaughn, I think, has shown great growth, not only as a player, but as a leader. And it would not surprise me at all, as we were talking about in the office the other day, to see him perhaps be a captain next year. So I think that is, he's on the way, certainly, and doing things like this only speak to his thoughtfulness that, I mean, you see goofy Vaughn all the time, but he's doing a lot of stuff that is pretty meaningful as well. So, but
he's
if you
goofy,
have,
but like they're all his friends.
Yeah. But anyway, if you have a thought about what you would give the AFC West, excuse me.
There's East and then there's West.
Yeah. It's somewhere in between. But tweet at us at Cardboard Gerald or at Eric DeLalla. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll talk to you next week on the AFC West Roundup. Thanks, guys.
Worst game I've ever been a part of.
That's special teams coordinator Joe DeCamillis, who is less than pleased with the Broncos' performance against the Chiefs last Sunday, especially on special teams. I'm Caroline Disley. It's time for the Week 13 edition of the Sound Recap here on Horse and Around. The Broncos are coming off a tough loss to the AFC West rival Kansas City Chiefs, 30-27 in overtime. But now coming down to the wire here of the 2016 season with just 5 games left, the focus is just on bouncing back against the Jacksonville Jaguars.
We play football in the National Football League. It's about winning. You know, it's not about going out there and losing. It's about winning. So every time we step out on the football field, that's what we try to do. And, you know, it doesn't always happen where, you know, you win, but that's what we go out there to do. So going out there this weekend, that's what we're going out there to do. We're going out there to win. We prepare to win. We practice. The energy has been great, good enough for a win. We just got to go out there and get it.
They'll have to do it without starting quarterback Trevor Siemian, who is out with a foot injury that was suffered in overtime against the Kansas City Chiefs, which means rookie Paxton Lynch will be getting his second start of the season, and the rest of the team has full faith in their rookie quarterback.
I feel confident myself. I think the guys around me feel confident in me too. Starting off the week, you know, getting your first week of practice again after the Atlanta week, getting some reps under your belt felt good. So felt good to close the week out with good practice.
And his confidence level, he's always played with, you know, great confidence, especially being a younger guy. But we don't, you know, put that tag on him anymore as a rookie. He's one of them guys that contributes to the team and plays well if he plays. And, you know, all the way through practice, he's been, you know, doing well. And he always bring that factor of stringing plays out, too. And when he's out there playing, he's that joker out there. You don't know what you're going to get, but you're going to know you're going to get consistency.
Despite the heartbreaking loss to the Chiefs, Von Miller was able to put an incredible performance together. 3 sacks, 10 tackles unassisted, just absolutely dominant, which has a lot of people around here wondering if he is going to be the defensive player of the year.
Von Miller? Oh, yeah. I've had several in my career, and he's right up there with on that level of playing having a tremendous year. He plays the run really well too, and what he had 10 tackles last game, 10 unassisted tackles last game. I mean, so he doesn't just rush the passer. So I think that's where you get a defensive player of the year is when they play both run and pass, and he does that both tremendously well.
Oh yeah, I tell him that all the time, and we talked about it from OTAs, training camp, beginning of the season, all the way to now. I think he's one of those guys where you got to put two guys on him to make, to stop him or to slow him down. And I think he's one of those, we call it DOI, candidates, and he's playing up to that standard and playing well.
That's it for the Week 13 Sound Recap. I'm Caroline Dicely, and we'll be back next week after the Broncos beat the Jaguars.
Time now for the best portion of the podcast. That's because BTV is in the house. Phil Milani with
Matt Boyer.
Talking about, for the next 5 hours, the season's...
Come on, Sorry. We've been using that joke for four straight weeks.
That's my joke.
Gosh, all right.
No, but seriously, we're talking about the college football playoff and the conference system in college, specifically with regards to the Big Ten. It is possible, depending on how things go in the championship games, that the Big Ten could have Ohio State and Michigan both in the college football playoff, yet neither of those teams will participate in the conference's championship game. There's something wrong there.
Well, this is why the college football playoff committee was created, right? Because you could have a scenario where an Alabama or an Auburn are the two best teams in the SEC, and it's Texas A&M coming out of the SEC as the conference champion, even though the records, head-to-head matchups, everything would dictate that, Auburn and Alabama are the two best teams in the SEC. Same thing for the Big Ten, right? This year, obviously the two best teams clearly have been Ohio State and Michigan in the regular season. Now, those two teams won't be playing in the conference championship. However, the College Football Playoff Committee has deemed Ohio State to be worthy enough of the number two seed, and it looks like they're a lock for the college football playoff. Now, Michigan can still get in if Washington loses and Clemson loses, and or Clemson. So I think that this is why the committee was created. I don't know if it's a fair system, but this is the best that we got.
I don't think that it's fair, because why should Clemson or Washington be punished for playing in their championship game because they're facing tough opponents that could knock them out of the college football playoff?
I don't think it's a punishment, though. You've got an opportunity to be a great team and improve your resume. If you do that, then yeah, you've solidified your case to be one of the best in the National Football League, one of the best in the NCAA, and we'll go to the college football playoff. I think this is just the committee sees this as another opportunity to get a win. I also think, however, that it's more about the broad spectrum of an entire season rather than just the end of the year, one championship game.
So I guess what I meant by that is, as the regular season is now completed,
yes,
the College Football Playoff Committee has looked at the resume of all of these teams, and as it stands currently, they deem Washington and Clemson to be the best in the top four.
Yes.
Okay, so if the playoff were to have been decided at the end of the regular season, Clemson and Washington would be in there, no, hands down.
Well, that's
at the end of the regular season, that's where they would be. Now, they have to go, for Washington, have to play a top 10 opponent in Colorado, and because of that, it could knock them out of the playoffs.
Right, but it could also strengthen
they don't need their resume to be strengthened. They're already number 4.
But I mean, you could also say, the regular season ends this week for Oklahoma and Oklahoma State.
That's
a game at the end of the year, right?
These are all games. It doesn't matter, though, because Washington is playing an additional game that Michigan and Ohio State are not.
Your problem is the fact that a conference champion would not be in the Final Four, correct? There's a prospect of that happening.
That the idea is that these teams are being punished for playing an additional game and trying to win their conference. Meanwhile, you have teams like Ohio State and Michigan that are not playing this weekend that could really benefit from this.
Right, but you also have teams, Washington could benefit. Wisconsin could benefit from it because they're outside.
Yes. Those schools can. Like Wisconsin or Penn State can benefit from it, but the team like Washington, I'm talking specifically Washington here, can really be hurt by this, and it's just not fair.
You could also make the argument that had the committee ruled a different way, Michigan could be sitting four, and Washington could need this game because the margin is razor thin.
Don't.
Right, but these are all hypotheticals, right? The bottom line.
I mean, Michigan could have beaten Ohio State and been playing this weekend.
Right. Right, but my point is this, right? So even if that would have happened, right, they would have been at two, and even a loss in the championship game
could have knocked them way out of the playoff.
Maybe, but maybe not. These are all hypotheticals. Back to the facts, though, about the conferences themselves. That's where the issue lies.
There's issues there too.
The conference system, the divisions. Okay, that's where the issues lie because they're not weighted equally, okay? Ohio State and Michigan, clearly the two best teams in the Big Ten this year, play on the same side, okay? Auburn and Alabama, traditionally the two best teams in the SEC, play on the same side, right? You could even say Washington and Washington State. Typically,
can't say that.
Washington, how about this? USC and UCLA. Okay, traditionally two big powers, but they play in the same side of the conference. You see it everywhere, right?
I think
the imbalance of these conferences is where the problem lies.
Well, the other there's not really that kind of problem in the Pac-12, but the problem is a team like Colorado did not have to play Washington in the regular season.
Okay.
Meanwhile, USC, who finished second in the South, did have to play Washington.
Right.
So there's some unfairness there too,
yeah,
that benefited Colorado to help them get to this championship game.
Yeah, so the bottom line is the system's not perfect.
It's very flawed.
Right, but I don't think there's a viable solution out there yet.
Not yet, but I'm about to offer one.
Okay, go ahead.
Here we go. The playoff is extended to eight teams. The five Power Five schools or conferences, the winner of those conferences automatically are in the playoff, and then there's three wild cards that could help get in a Michigan and Ohio State. Because, look, don't get me wrong. I think that Ohio State and Michigan are two of the top four teams.
Yeah.
I think that. But playing in this system, they both should not be in the college football playoff.
There's always going to – I like the idea of an 8-team playoff because I think I love college football and it gives us more games and the playoff system.
One extra game only, because that's another concern, is that people are like, the season is going to get too – nope. This would create one extra game, and it would help ensure that – look, if you win your conference, you're in. No questions asked.
But it's cool. It's cool, right? Because you get more. There's more competition at the end of the year. It's like the NCAA tournament, right? That's arguably, you know, the greatest playoff system there is.
I want
is.
More it's, teams right. in there.
Right. Exactly. So, but
settle it on the field.
But like the NCAA basketball tournament, there's always going to be teams who feel like they've been left out or who've gotten a raw deal because the selection committee hasn't picked them. Even if we go to eight, I think Western Michigan would be upset because I'm not even sure Western Michigan would be in that top eight. So there's going to be flaws
but
in whatever system.
The difference between the two are that the teams at the back end of the basketball tournament are not going to be winning the tournament.
Well,
they're not going to. But a top eight team, you know, could win, could go on a run here in football. Oklahoma could conceivably beat Alabama.
Well, it's a little apples and oranges, right? Because a lot of the teams at the back end of that 68 team playoff bracket are you would consider, you know, automatic qualifiers. The automatic qualifiers, it's not the 68 best teams.
There's
32
qualifiers.
Right?
Yeah.
There's the 32 automatic qualifiers, and then there's the 32 wild cards plus the last four. So I think that the systems are a little bit different, hard to compare. However, I do think that you're right. I think it would benefit from a larger playoff system, but I still think it's going to be flawed, and I still think you're going to have teams like a Michigan, like a Washington, like a Wisconsin, who are going to, you know, have some hurt feelings at the end, even with an 8-team playoff system.
Well, not if you win your conference championship. If Washington were to win, they'd be in. If Wisconsin wins, they're in. And that's because it's being settled on the field, and that's the way it should be.
Now,
let's get to the NFL picks real quick here. Chiefs going on the road to face the Falcons.
I like how you just ended that. It was just like, all right, we're done talking about it. No more. Okay. So you said Chiefs-Falcons?
Yeah.
I think the Chiefs have played really well. I think they demonstrated that they can compete with the best in the NFL when they came out to Denver and beat a really good Denver offense last weekend. I think that it's going to be hard for them to beat the Falcons on the road. I think you're coming off of such a high, it's going to be a little – I see a little bit of a trap game here. I like the Falcons.
Atlanta's favored by five, but I like the Chiefs on the road, especially after seeing them last week. Going on to the next one here, Bills at the Raiders.
Bills at the Raiders. Oh, gosh, those cross-country road trips are murder. I think that the Raiders have been playing some of the best football in the NFL, just like the Chiefs have, and I think Derek Carr, well-deserved MVP consideration. I think he's going to keep up the MVP-type play. I like the Raiders. That defense, Khalil Mack last week against Cam,
I think Von Miller.
Yeah, I don't see the Raiders losing.
Did you see Derek Carr's pinky?
It's disgusting.
That looked disgusting. I can't believe he came out. He came back and he played really well.
Yeah,
that was an incredible performance. Raiders are favored by 3. I like the Raiders at home against the Bills. And then finally, here are the Buccaneers traveling to face the Chargers.
The Chargers, you know, a lot swirling about. There's rumors that they might be moving to LA this week. You know, we certainly hope for the best for that franchise and everybody working there. You know, we've got a lot of people that we know on that side. So I think that those circumstances are tough to play through. There's a lot of distractions going on right now. Tampa Bay is playing really well. I like the Bucs. I just think that the momentum's on their side. Jameis is coming into his own. Gerald McCoy having another last couple great games. A nice little set he's putting together. I think the Bucs are going to go in there and take it.
Yeah, Chargers are favored by 4, but I like Tampa Bay too. Sometimes in the NFL, it's about when you play a team.
Yep.
And right now, Tampa Bay is really hot.
Yep.
And I think that they'll go on the road and get the win, especially after the way they've been playing. They really shut down that Seahawks offense.
Yep.
Okay, well, that's going to do it for the best portion of the podcast. That's because BTV keeps it real, maybe a little bit too real this week.
Too real for the viewer, or the listeners.
But we out of here. For Matt Boyer, I'm Phil Maline. We out.
Bye, people.
Shoot.
I think that episode might have been the best.